on the weekend panel this morning are the journalist, philanthropist and sporting commentator Lavina Good. Good morning, Lavina.
Morning, Jim. Morning, Mike.
Morning.
And Mike Williams, the former Labour Party president and chief executive of the Howard League. Kia ora korowa. Now, a highlight or low light from each of you from the week just past to start, please. Mike, what's caught your eye?
Oh, the highlight of the week is this morning going back a level.
Yes.
I think New Zealand, Auckland is a heartily sick of yo-yoing between levels. And so, you know, this morning getting back to normal, planning to go out to lunch with some old mates, that's the highlight of the week for me.
And we can have you in as a guest as well.
Absolutely.
Lavina, what's caught your eye, please?
Yeah, the low light was obviously our hearts went out to Auckland for another week of lockdown. We thought that was horrible and felt for everyone. But the highlight definitely was a shaky day on Friday in the Bay of Plenty. Plenty of my friends and whānau live in Whakatāne, so I was busy calling them throughout Friday morning. I know we'll talk about it a bit later, but one of my mates was helping push a lady up a hill to make sure that she was reaching higher territory. And I spoke to heaps of people just saying that the schools had come together really well. Communities were opening up their homes to people trying to walk out of town. There was gridlock, but no anger. And it was a community that was united for this particular cause. So regardless of how it's assessed later, Whakatāne really that they're on the coast and they need to come together as a community and support each other. So it was lovely to hear that.
People did brilliantly. Mike, what would you say, though, to the people in Auckland who went swimming for a bit of a thrill?
There's always a proportion of the population who either don't get the message or are too stupid to do the right thing. And I can remember when I was a kid years ago, there was a tsunami warning in Napier. Must have been in the 60s or 70s, and a large group of people gathered on the Marine Parade to watch it happen.
Yeah, that's a classic behaviour, isn't it? Lavina, with you on, I've got to mention the Silver Ferns, who are doing so well. Are we surprised that, I know it's still, you know, in the balance as far as who holds the Constellation Cup, but are you surprised at what you've seen?
I've been impressed with what I've seen from the Silver Ferns, especially in Game 1 and 3. I know Australia had just come out of lockdown for Game 1 and were convincingly defeated by the Silver Ferns. And then in Game 2, they reversed that. So lots of people were saying, oh, maybe it was because of the fact that they had been in lockdown. But yesterday's match was outstanding. And the person that impresses me most when it comes to the Silver Fern outfit is definitely their coach, Nolene Totua, because she came out a year ago and said that conditionally our team isn't fit enough and we need these girls to get fitter and stronger if they're going to continue to be world champions. And she hasn't been shy in introducing new players with a better attitude towards fitness and the international netball scene. So there's an element of professionalism around the Silver Ferns at the moment, which I don't think they've had in years gone by and will continue to have. So let's hope that they take out that Constellation Cup today. They're allowed to play in front of fans, which I know will help their cause. And it's been 9 years since they've had that Constellation Cup. And if they play like they did yesterday, Jim, we will be celebrating them as the world champions that they are.
Yes, indeed. A long time without the silverware. And the Black Caps, White Ferns, Hurricanes, Crusaders, the crowds are back for a few big sporting games. Mike, do you follow a team or two? How sporty are you?
Well, when I was a school teacher, I coached soccer, but that was because I taught at Pakeranga College for the bulk of my career. And believe it or not, in those days, they didn't have a rugby team because we were surrounded by British immigrants. So soccer was very strong. I actually really enjoyed that, but I'm now following netball. I really enjoy it. And I really love I think she's the captain, Amelia Ann Ekenazi, who was brought up in Australia and could not get a regular slot in the Australian team. So discovered New Zealand citizenship and now plays for us. It really gives me a lovely warm feeling that we've stolen such a good player.
It makes a change from the other way around.
Exactly.
Live netball is a fantastic game to watch, being there, isn't it?
It really is.
Let's talk about the week under Level 3 in Auckland. And first, this comment from the social commentator Phil Collins. Does that sum it up? Was it a land of confusion, Lavina?
Yes, it was a land of confusion, I do believe. First of all, the accusations were thrown around as to why and how and who, and a 21-year-old went off and what happened to the test. So the whole country came down on one person initially. There was confusion, I think, between Mr. Bloomfield and also our Prime Minister as to whether or not someone should be punished for breaking a rule and who should be punished when and why. And then all of a sudden the country, well, you know, a quarter of the country goes into a certain lockdown period that they weren't expecting and had no justification for. So a lot of confusion surrounded the last week, I think, for people looking for answers, just trying to find out why this virus is here in the first place and where it came from and how do we stop it. So I guess the government were damned if they did or didn't. You know, people were waiting for cases to come through and that didn't happen, so they'll be critiqued for it. But the avenue of communication didn't seem as open as what it had been in the past, and there's lots of confusion surrounding it and will continue to surround it unless they, I guess, get everything lined up for us so that we know what's happening.
We could go through all the confusion, but we won't. But for example, people who visited the City Fitness Gym at Hunters Plaza and Papatoetoe at certain times on 2 days must still report for COVID-19 testing and remain isolated until further notice, which is very irksome for them. But I see there's a defence of Case M in the New Zealand Herald this morning. We read about him losing his sense of smell, getting COVID tested, then going to the gym. But the defence reads that Ministry of Health guidelines for tests at level one were that even people with symptoms did not need to self-isolate after getting a test because it was considered much more likely to be a cold rather than COVID. Mike, there
and there's the confusion. There's the confusion for you, isn't it? Really, that's so confusing.
And Mike, there are no easy paths through these sorts of situations.
No, there isn't. But I think what we've got to do is learn from this week. And what I've learned over the years is that New Zealand has developed an underclass, and these people are not online, and there's a very heavy reliance of the government on online communications, and it doesn't always work, as we found out with the 2017 census. And there was a very interesting piece on Television New Zealand news last night about trying to work out how to do the census better with Maori. And apparently only 68% of Maori actually filled in the census form. Well, that means 32% didn't. That's a quarter of a million people who did not respond to the census. So I think the government's got to have a close look at how it communicates. And particularly where people have English as a second language. Now, the cause of this latest cluster were two women going for a walk. Now, they were both mums, presumably older women, and the person who did go on television described English as a second language in her household. You need to do something else to get through to those people, and it may be that door knocking is the way to go.
Pretty resource intense, isn't it?
Exactly.
Door knocking. That is the issue. All right. Chris Hipkins blasted Brian and Hannah Tamaki for leaving Auckland on the Saturday night and driving down to Rotorua.
I think it's completely irresponsible.
On the other hand, Willie Jackson was in on the cabinet Zoom call during the Joseph Parker fight and he stayed there. Any difference, Mike? I'll go to you first.
Well, the Prime Minister told, apparently, Willie Jackson and Judith Collins not to leave. And I can see why you'd do that. You know, you don't want to create panic. But there was interesting response to the Tamakis. You had Heather Duplessis-Allen said they did nothing wrong, and yet Jim Soper, who was actually Heather's husband, said they've got to be making an example.
Barry Soper.
Yeah, Barry Soper. And, you know, I tend to follow what Barry Soper said. These people are public figures, and they should really be seeking to set an example.
Lavina.
Well, it's no different to someone having a batch out of town and then getting through security by saying, oh, here's a bill from my batch in the Bay of Plenty or the Coromandel. I own a house there. I mean, the rules are in place. The lockdown was enforced because a virus can spread really, really quickly. And I think it doesn't matter if you have a strong representation in the community or not, whether or not you're a public figure or not. You should be treating it like it's lockdown level three. That's what the Prime Minister said to everyone. So to think that there were people sneaking out of town to get to a holiday home because the restrictions out of town are easier is not healthy for us because they may have the virus and that's how it spreads. So no one should have been escaping anywhere, I don't think.
But when Southland Mayor Gary Tong said, you know, they're not welcome because Brian Tamaki visits Southland on his hunting trips, the way they left Auckland under cover of darkness, really, it's not good. At what point does a witch hunt begin, Mike?
Well, I think it should be over. These are silly people. They do silly things. They say silly things. They repeatedly set up political parties, which nobody votes for. And it's something you've just got to put up with in a free society, unfortunately.
They say they aren't anti-vaxxers, though.
And yet they won't get vaccinated. Again, what sort of an example is that setting?
All right. Should people who self-isolate... 8 minutes to nine is the time, by the way, with Mike and Lavina on the weekend panel. Should people who self-isolate get 100% of the money they would have been earning as the National Party wants? Should it be that simple, Lavina?
In a way, it should be. I don't know where the money would come from. You're assuming the government coffers, but I think it's unfair on people that have payments of bills and rent that they have to meet, and then all of a sudden are only receiving a third of that payment. I think if there was a set price where if you have to have a week or two off because you have to isolate due to the coronavirus, then I think a full payment should be in place. And I know that would cost the government a tremendous amount of money. Whether or not the government has to support businesses to pay those people would be considered. But I know by doing that, it would encourage more people to self-isolate for sure.
Mike?
Yeah, I agree with Lavina. I think that certainly should be looked at. If you look at the young woman who went and did a shift at KFC, I think it was, that was probably worth after tax about $100. Now, that may be a crucial contribution to the household income of that particular household. Again, looking at, you know, the underclass that we've developed since Rogernomics.
Let's change. I want to squeeze in a few topics before 9 o'clock. The Prime Minister has told Emmanuel Macron of our deep concern over the blocking of Australia's vaccines. And back in November, she and Monsieur Macron agreed to make sure that we're supporting the Pacific region with vaccination and vaccination plans. There is an argument that Europe has bungled its vaccine rollout and is grasping at straws to save face. The Wall Street Journal says Italy, which is blocking AstraZeneca from Australia, has used only 26% of its supply. Vaccine wars. Is this pretty appalling to you, Lavina?
Yeah, the sound of it is pretty appalling to me, the fact that there would be vaccine wars, but it was always going to be the case where the rich countries get the vaccine and the poor countries have to wait. And I think we're all pretty well aware of that. If you look into what's happening in Italy at the moment, they've had nearly 3 million cases with close to 100,000 deaths. And I think Australia, on the other hand, are 28,000-29,000 cases with 900 deaths. So the Italians are going, you guys are going to be okay. You're not as suffering as much as us. We're still on the ascent, so we need to hang on to it as long as possible. And we know Australia might even be producing their own vaccine out of Melbourne within a month's time. But I think the solution to this is, all over the world, what we should be doing is vaccinating the people that are healthcare workers, the border workers, and also those that are vulnerable, the elderly and also the sick, and then looking at other countries that need that rather than having a whole vaccination out on a whole nation and eliminating it completely there. Because I think if you're 30 years of age in New Zealand, and I'm not saying not to get vaccinated, but if you do get the coronavirus, you may survive as opposed to someone in a Pacific island that would not be able to survive because they're more vulnerable. So it's interesting. I don't think the whole hanging on to the vaccine thing's going to look good. I had a feeling it would always happen, and the rich countries were securing these earlier. But I think if you vaccinated a certain group of people first and allowed for other countries, that might be a solution.
Mike, we canvassed last week whether South Auckland should get the vaccine first. Another question, should obese people get the vaccine first? About 2.2 million of the 2.5 million deaths from COVID have been in countries with high levels of overweight people, says a report from the World Obesity Federation. How do you think we should triage
this? You learn to trust people during this pandemic, and one of the people I trust is called Helen Petrusis Harris, who is an expert on vaccination. And the point she made on Radio New Zealand earlier this week was, we are going to have to be flexible about this. You know, there was a call for vaccinating all of South Auckland, and there's a good reason to consider that. I mean, that's where the airport is. It's where a lot of the quarantine hotels are. There's calls to inoculate Maori first. But I think a lot of this confusion will be solved when the production of the vaccine ramps up. I mean, I was impressed with what Scott Morrison said when Italy cancelled 250,000 doses coming to Australia. He observed that Australia hadn't had a death for some months, and Italy was copping deaths at 300 a day.
Yes.
So, and also last week, a large pharmaceutical company which has not developed a vaccine handed over its production facilities to one that has. So you're going to see production ramped up, and these arguments will die off.
It makes it all the more hard to understand if Italy was sitting on those vaccines and not using them, why that happened. All right. The Oprah Winfrey interview with Prince Harry, screening tonight in the United States.
How do you feel about the palace hearing you speak your truth today?
I don't know how they could expect that after all of this time, we would still just be silent if there is an active role that the firm is playing in perpetuating falsehoods about us.
We don't know what happened behind the scenes, do we, with Meghan and the royal courtiers between the two of them in the palace, why the media turned on her. What do you both think, and are you surprised that Harry is equating it, as he is to seemingly, to the hounding of Diana? Mike Williams, you first, please.
Well, I, to be honest with you, I don't take a lot of interest in this. It's like a sort of ongoing soap opera. But what I would say is that I don't think Meghan Markle knew what she was letting herself in for. And she wanted to cherry-pick the role. I don't think you can do that. And the chickens have come home to roost. It's going to be an ongoing bit of nastiness, which we'll all thoroughly enjoy.
Is it going to be a building nastiness, I suppose? Obviously, the what's at stake, the tension has been ratcheted up in the last few days with those promos, and it seems to be gradually getting more serious.
Well, there seems to be a sort of tit-for-tat thing going on. When it was announced that the Meghan Markle and Prince Harry were going to do the opera in for it, interview, you suddenly hear that the Queen is going to get her injection on television, and then we hear more about the opera interview, and there's an accusation that Meghan Markle bullied people. So, you know, this could go on and on and on, but it's not really relevant to anything very much. It's just entertainment.
Just entertainment, Lavina, or do you think it has the potential to do damage to royalty?
Well, I know what's happening behind the scenes. Oprah Winfrey obviously wants to be queen. That's what she wants. And she has potential to do this through this interview because everyone's talking about it. We might find out from the Queen's butler that maybe Meghan didn't feed the dogs at an appropriate time. And the Queen will go dirty. And Oprah is the Queen of America. And we know she wants to be Queen of the world. So that's what we'll get out of the interview once we watch it tonight, because it has such a massive impact on all our lives as we face a pandemic and earthquakes and child poverty in New Zealand.
Tsunami.
Go Oprah.
So both of you are saying, actually, though, that the waters will close over and this is just a ripple in time and it will have no consequence.
I think that's right. And I was actually surprised when they moved to America initially, but I was also surprised that a successful American actress decided to give up her career in the 21st century to say to people, hey, I'm giving up my career so that I can be part of royalty. That surprised me in the first place. Maybe she realised that she is a woman who can be successful in her own right, wants to move to America and give it another go. I am surprised they're doing this interview because it will draw media attention and it will create an argument between her and the royals. And I thought that's what she was trying to avoid. So time will tell once we see it, I guess.
Lavina Good, thank you for your company this morning. Mike Williams, you too. Nice of you to come in on the weekend panel.